Welcome to the Chief AI Officer Podcast,
where AI meets leadership.
And here is your host, Sanjay Puri.
Welcome to the CAIO Podcast, where we explore the frontiers of artificial intelligence with the leaders shaping its future in major enterprises. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we have the privilege of speaking with Vijay Shankaran, the Chief Technology Officer and Chief AI Officer, as well as the Head of Digital Solutions at Johnson Controls. Vijay is a distinguished technology executive with a remarkable track record in software engineering, digital transformation, and AI innovation. From his current role at Johnson Controls to his prior positions at TD Ameritrade and Ford, Vijay has consistently been at the forefront of technological advancement. Today, we are going to delve into Vijay's insights on AI implementation, the challenges and opportunities in the field, and his vision for the future of AI in enterprise settings. So without further ado, let's welcome Vijay Shankaran to the CIO Podcast. Welcome, Vijay.
Thanks so much, Sanjay. It's great to be here with you.
Awesome. Vijay, we have a global audience. Our audience is policymakers, our audience is AI entrepreneurs, people work at large AI companies as well as startups, and also chief AI officers or aspiring chief AI officers. So can you tell our listeners, people who are not as familiar with Johnson Control, a little bit briefly about Johnson Control, and specifically, you've got three big titles. What does your role entail there?
Well, you know, ultimately, you know, I lead, you know, the thought leadership for technology, primarily digital technology for all of Johnson Controls. And Johnson Controls is over 100-year-old company, completely focused on the smart building space, driving outcomes around energy optimization, decarbonization, asset health inside of the building, space utilization, space planning inside of the building, and also how employees utilize the space. And so I've got full responsibility around, you know, what those solutions need to be to support smart buildings, as well as now leading the AI transformation across Johnson Controls, not just for the digital piece of it, but the entire organization, and leading our digital solutions business, which entails both connected solutions as well as software that our customers use to run their smart buildings.
Oh, fantastic. That's a wide, responsibility that you have. A 100-year-old company that is focused on buildings, sustainability. Vijay, for our listeners, can you explain to them who are probably scratching their heads and thinking, okay, how is AI being currently used in a business like Johnson Controls?
Well, AI is being used, you know, all across the enterprise. And I mean, AI is not new to Johnson Controls. I mean, Johnson Controls has a long history in leveraging predictive AI to power outcomes, whether that's around, you know, optimizing the way that chillers work inside of the buildings, really leveraging security equipment to better understand, you know, and detect certain scenarios inside of different kinds of facilities, you know, AI in our in how we operate, whether that's around, you know, our supply chain processes, you know, on enabling marketing outcomes through advanced predictive analytics and scoring and things like that. So AI, like many businesses, you know, it's not new to Johnson Controls, and I would say it's fairly pervasive in how we've been using predictive AI across the enterprise. What is new around AI is generative AI, which everybody has been talking about this year. And then as the next chapter of that, how do you, you know, really merge generative AI with predictive AI to build those AI solutions that, you know, drive different and powerful outcomes, both within the operations of Johnson Controls as well as for our customers. And as part of my digital business, that's what we've really been focused on, is really how do we really mash generative AI with predictive AI to provide optimization and recommendations and actual autonomous closed loop control for building operators and facilities managers.
So obviously AI has been used, as you said, for predictive analytics, et cetera, for a long period of time. And then you had LLMs or Gen AI just storm on the scene. And obviously now you're trying to figure out how to integrate both those things. Generally, from a building and space standpoint, what are the unique challenges, Vijay, for implementing AI solutions in a building and space environment?
Yeah, so I mean, I think, you know, more so than any other business that, you know, I've been a part of, number one, there's the variety of different types of devices that exist inside of buildings. And you could have a portfolio of buildings that have different cameras, different control systems, different elevators, different sensors, you know, different fire systems, so on and so forth. And so all of these different systems have been installed, you know, over decades in some cases, and primarily don't talk to each other. And they're very insulated within their own particular domain. And, you know, the data that's produced off of these types of systems, even within different types of control systems, which controls the functions of the buildings, could be vastly different, you know, based upon both the control systems and the equipment that it's connected to. So number one, there's a variety of data challenge. Number two is really, it's a velocity of data. So, you know, just like any other big IoT type of implementation, the data is coming at you in real time, different signals, different alarms, many false alarms. And so you have to have a way of educating that velocity of data. And then finally, the volume of data, you know, so you have massive amounts of data that get generated in a very short period of time in the buildings. And so how do you basically apply AI, you know, successfully, you know, dealing with that variety, volume, and velocity? And that's a big, big challenge that's very unique to the building space.
So, Vijay, that leads me to a couple of very interesting points. And I hope I don't forget both of them. So first one is it multimodal data that is coming in? That's my first question. And the second question, obviously, is with so much data coming in, as you know, data is the foundation of AI, but data privacy and data security is also one of the biggest concerns. So talk to some of your peers who are also dealing with this issue. How do you view this at a, you know, at a high level from a data security type? Because you are dealing with massive amounts of data.
Sure. So, you know, number one, yes, it is multimodal types of data. You know, we get, you know, we can get video data into OpenBlue. We can get different kinds of alarm type data that comes into OpenBlue. We really haven't done much with sound data. So it's mostly, you know, spatial, you know, metrics data, telemetry, and it can be some video data as well. Although it's primarily, I would say, spatial and telemetry is the primary types of data. As it relates to data privacy and security, I mean, we take this extremely seriously in our digital platforms, OpenBlue. And number one, you know, we were a close contributor, you know, with the EU Data Act, working closely around those regulations. We work very closely across the world to understand, you know, the regulations. We have several hosting zones that have been set up on a global basis in order to make sure that residency is preserved in all the cases where it needs to be preserved. And then all of the data is anonymous in the sense that, you know, you don't know where that particular facility, you know, is. All customers' data is separated into separate database domains. You know, there's a lot of care and protection that we take in order to make sure that, you know, if that data was exposed in any sort of a way, that, you know, we have risk mitigation in place to ensure that, you know, sensitive data isn't compromised. Now, for the most part, you know, data in the buildings comprises of faults and, you know, it's telemetry and it's spatial. And once it's normalized within OpenBlue, it's also very difficult to, you know, pick out anything that would, you know, be highly sensitive, you know, within a building context. But we have a privacy office, we have a chief privacy officer. The chief privacy officer also is, you know, our legal counsel for our digital solutions. And so by, I think, putting together all of these different types of risk mitigations, you know, we've really taken both, you know, cyber prevention as well as data privacy and data residency and adherence to local regulations really seriously, putting in place, you know, a global best-in-class platform.
Well, that's great, especially for your peers to hear that how you're managing security and privacy. But it leads me to a couple more questions. One is, you're responsible, and you talked a little bit about the OpenBlue initiative. Can you explain to our listeners what it is and how AI and machine learning are integrated into this platform? That's number one. And then I'll ask you the second one after that.
Sure. And so AI and machine learning are integrated into the OpenBlue platform in a few different ways. And so, you know, our primary solution that takes the building data and gives KPIs and recommendations and things like that, you know, is the OpenBlue Enterprise Manager. You can think of that as sort of your single pane of glass into the building ecosystem and everything that's going on inside of the building. A lot of the KPIs in there, the critical thresholds, they're all powered through predictive AI models, you know, a lot of the correlation of faults and things like that. And so what we've built internally is an AI as a service platform, which basically manages all of these different models and can basically orchestrate the execution of different kinds of AI applications within this OpenBlue Enterprise Manager. And now we've extended that internal AI as a service platform in order to be inclusive of generative AI as well, primarily leveraging the Microsoft Azure OpenAI. We have a strong partnership with Microsoft. We were IoT Partner of the Year for Microsoft last year. And so leveraging that and all the, you know, protections that come with the Microsoft Open AI Azure platform, you know, we've been able to build out some applications that now seamlessly integrate into our OpenBlue Enterprise Manager app modules because it is correlated by that same AI as a service layer that we wrote.
Wow. So you were Partner of the Year for Microsoft. That's a very impressive. Congratulations, Vijay.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Vijay, there's been a lot of talk about AI and energy, and we'll delve a little bit into it. But let's talk about a little bit about the positive. Can you talk about the role of AI in improving sustainability and energy efficiency in buildings? And then we'll talk a little bit about the other
discussion. Absolutely. So, I mean, I think AI in improving energy efficiency and sustainability is an incredibly important tool that, you know, and the role that AI can play in terms of driving, you know, efficiency and decarbonization. And there are many ways that you can do that. Number one is, you know, predictive forecasting. And so, you know, based upon, you know, what the weather might be in a particular locale or occupancy might be in a building on a given time period, you then have the opportunity to basically, you know, reduce the output of certain mostly HVAC equipment inside of the building so that, you know, you can lower your energy output, hence driving carbon optimization, right? And so I think that is an area that predictive AI has a huge role in. And what we do on top of that is once those recommendations are generated around, hey, we noticed that a cold front is coming through, you know, that is going to drop the temperature in the area by, 10 degrees. We don't think that you need to run, you know, your air conditioning systems anymore at, you know, 70 degrees, but you can run them at a lower point because it's already going to be cool outside, or higher point. We actually provide the building operator with our OpenBlue autonomous command and control, the ability to press a button and actually, you know, change those set points so that, you know, they can get a benefit without having to send a technician on site to basically vary those particular points. So that's number one. It's a huge benefit in terms of total closed loop optimization. And I think that's where, that's the way that any sophisticated optimization AI system should work. Secondly, you know, with generative AI now, we can actually go into local laws and things like that and understand how potential emissions output from specific pieces of equipment may put you out of compliance with local legislation. It may also, you know, if you look at your glide path to net zero, you know, you also, we have detailed scope one and scope two measurement for all the equipment inside of the building, merging, you know, utility bill data and things like that, and tapping into metering, you know, to actually show, okay, here's the projection for net zero compliance. You know, let me use now generative AI to marry that against local legislation and then see where you might be out of compliance, and then actually provide you with recommendations on how you might remediate, you know, some of the high consumers of, you know, energy and carbon output. So it's pretty powerful, you know, the types of things that you can do with both traditional AI and generative AI in terms of, you know, optimizing energy and driving down your carbon emissions.
Well, that's fantastic. As you said, predictive AI, and then obviously Gen AI with utilities, with county rules and regulations. Let's just talk a little bit about this discussion that's going on, that Gen AI, you know, that if you put a query in a prompt into, you know, ChatGPT versus Google search, it consumes, what, let's say, 10x more energy, and that it is going to suck a lot of energy. Data centers are coming up, and, you know, I'm based here in DC, and about 20 minutes from here is the data center capital of the world with Ashburn in Northern Virginia, and utility volumes are growing dramatically. Does Johnson Control have a play in this? Firstly, and what is your view? Is that because this is a very important topic that is going on? A lot of these companies are saying we are not going to meet our carbon offset things, etc.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a really interesting conversation, Sanjay, as you mentioned, right? I mean, you know, I think Microsoft came out, you know, a couple of months ago and said they were behind their 2020, you know, emissions targets because of the explosion in generative AI, right? So I think there's a couple of different pieces that you unpack, right? Number one is your utilization of AI internal to the company, okay? And I think number one, you know, generative AI is a tool in the toolbox, right? It isn't needed to solve every problem. And even within generative AI, you know, there's subvariations of generative AI, you know, everything from, you know, language translation to video processing to the different varieties of GPT 3.0, 4.0, right? And each of them has different costs associated with it in terms of, you know, energy consumption, which is also commensurate to the price that you pay for prompt and, you know, the size of the prompt. And so this is where, you know, going back to what I said earlier, this AI application, this AI architecture is so critical for companies going forward, because I think just like any application, you know, an AI application requires thoughtfulness in terms of how you solve the problem, right? Because you could just take an entire large data set, plow it into Gen AI and GPT-4, GPT-4.0, video images and things like that, and let it crunch and give you an answer, right? It's super easy, right? But is it the most, you know, optimized way to do it, right? Is it the most cost efficient and energy efficient way to do it, right? And so that's why, you know, we're seeing, I think, evolutions of that, you know, with like agentic AI or recursive AI, you know, coming up, right? And so now people are saying, okay, if I do a GPT 3.5 input output 4 or 5 times, you know, my result is actually better than what I get out of GPT 4.0 because I'm refining the prompts based upon the results, and it's more energy efficient because there's a smaller set of tokens in you know, parameters in GPT 3.5 versus GPT 4.0 by an order of magnitude of, you know, millions. And so so I think this is where internally you have to have strong AI architecture and really think through this. The other thing is that if you think about the chipset, which is ultimately the fundamental currency by which AI gets executed, you know, you have the NVIDIA GPU, which is the one that gets all the fanfare. Mm-hmm. But if you think about like what was the NVIDIA GPU actually designed for originally, it was for video gaming, right? Mm-hmm. So it essentially can handle much higher energy consuming workloads than is actually needed for a lot of forms of AI. And so, you know, I heard a really interesting podcast the other day about Intel's Gaudi processors, for example, which have just come out, which are a purpose-built AI processor, you know, which is focused around just processing LLMs. It doesn't have the overhead of having to deal with, you know, graphical type processing. And so I think, again, and they tout it as being more cost efficient and energy efficient and so on and so forth. And so, again, I think just like, you know, you've seen everything in technology evolve in your life, you know, you have to study the architecture and the approach for Gen AI. So that's number one. Number two is in this debate around, you know, how do you basically mitigate, you know, and optimize the energy consumption growth that's coming through data center growth. And we are a huge part of that data center ecosystem. And so, mm-hmm. you know, cooling and controls are a really important part of that overall end-to-end value chain. And how you control the data center, how you cool the data center, our chillers are at the center of a lot of that. And so we've made a lot of advancement on highly energy efficient chillers, different types of modularity on those chillers, different types of refrigerants on those chillers. And, you know, the team continues to work around innovations around that. We also now have connected, you know, over 20,000 chillers, you know, so that we can, you know, monitor their performance. We have a chiller performance index that's based upon AI that tells us if a chiller is performing well or not compared to industry benchmarks. And then based upon, you know, suboptimal performance, that means that it's more energy inefficient. And so, you know, we can go in and diagnose that chiller remotely and really understand how do we improve the performance of it. And then next, there's the OpenBlue, you know, actual optimization of a central utility plant where a lot of these chillers sit, and the ability to optimize chillers and other equipment in real time so that you actually are sensing and responding to the conditions in the data center, right? So let's say that you have certain servers that are not fully utilized. I mean, do you want to be cooling at the same rate as you would if, you know, all the servers were hot and running full, right? And so by being able to do some more micro optimizations, you know, we're able to actually reduce the energy burden as well as, you know, the carbon output. So, you know, we believe that we're trying to do everything that we can to basically provide solutions inside the data center that, you know, will optimize and mitigate, you know, some of those risks associated with energy. Obviously, it's unprecedented times, and in terms of the growth that we're seeing, and, you know, I don't see that growth based upon consumer demand and business demand dissipating. So it's going to require some broader, you know, solutions, you know, societally to figure out, you know, how we don't compromise our net zero goals while being able to, you know, really continue to drive technology expansion. Now, having been a technologist for my entire life, basically, and Sanjay, we've talked about this previously since like the fourth grade, right? you know, it's basically, you know, one of those things where technology always evolves to find the solution to a problem. So you have version 1.0, we have version 2.0, version 3.0. You know, technology will get more efficient chips, more efficient algorithms. You know, someone will come up with an alternate way of doing the same thing. So, you know, I would say probably in 3 to 5 years, you know, we'll probably find a different way to address some of these growing concerns around AI. So this is where we are right now, but it'll require some real, you know, debate and collaboration on these things.
No, but that's a lot of perspective, as you said, societal adjustments, some maybe using different kinds of chips, maybe being a little more innovative. And there are there is a conversation about a lot of new cooling technologies also, Vijay, that are kind of bubbling up. One thing one of your peers mentioned on our show was this, instead of LLMs, these small language models also, that we don't need, you don't need a big hammer to hit a small nail always. What do you think of that?
I think it's a great, you know, a great evolution. And I mean, I think that as many people are looking to run more workload on the edge, you know, we've invested heavily in a best-in-class edge solution that can do a lot of the data processing at the edge and a lot of the optimization there. You know, we can run an SLM, you know, or even, you know, small parameter LLMs, you know, on our edge, right? And that's it's a constrained, you know, computing device that can get a lot done, right? And so I think that's going to be hugely impactful. You know, Intel has a new chip that is going to be out running on PCs that's purpose-built for AI. I mean, Apple's got the M3, you know? So I think those are all pretty powerful, you know, tools. And so the things that I think will be really, really effective with SLMs and smaller LLMs is, like, you know, purpose-built language translation. So not every language in the world, but hey, I want to translate from English to Spanish, right? I think an SLM would be excellent for that. I think, you know, English to Japanese, Japanese to Hindi, you know, whatever it is, right? You can have a purpose-built SLM that can run locally to do a lot of those things, right? And so that, I think, is another really powerful option to offload, right? And so again, it goes back to, I've got this toolkit of different things that I can deploy, inclusive of SLMs. How do I design an application in a way with the right constraints and parameters to, you know, drive the outcomes that I'm trying to drive? But I agree with that individual that SLMs are going to be a really important tool in the toolbox of generative AI.
That's good to know. Let's talk about another topic that's getting a lot of attention in your world, which is there have been all kinds of reports saying, hey, let's talk about the return on investment for these big AI investments, you know, and obviously they're talking in some cases about, you know, the big Microsofts and others who are investing tens of billions of dollars into these data centers, etc. But it also kind of applies to large enterprises. So when you look at your investments, and this is for your peers, because they also face these questions, how do you look at a return on investment? Or is that, is it cost? Is it revenue? Is it efficiency? Just talk to your peers a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think this is an area that's really critical that, you know, if you're not kind of a core tech company, you put a lot of, you know, thought into this AI governance around different investments and the return on value, right? So, number one, I think everybody should be spending time on AI and specifically generative AI. I think that there are huge benefits around efficiency, you know, that I've already seen, and what you can do in very small periods of time leveraging Gen AI to deliver value. All right. So I think there's really impactful things you can do with generative AI very, very quickly. But really, understanding the value that's derived from the investment that's being made is also incredibly critical, because you could end up spending lots of money without really having an understanding of the value that's being generated. Because I think, just like data, where, you know, people said, hey, we should store all the data, right? And you put it out, put all the data on the cloud, you look back 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and, you know, you see a 9-figure bill, and, you know, you're wondering, okay, well, what value did I actually get from that data? And I think in many ways, you know, generative AI is in the same way. So what we've done, you know, is we've formed an AI executive governance, which is chaired by myself and my colleague, who's the CIO. And really, we have put together a framework, and we are establishing sort of a set of use cases and, you know, a set of architectural patterns that people can use to solve different kinds of problems. And so we're really focusing on solving the problems with the right tools and the approaches, and really understanding what the investment is and the ongoing, you know, operating costs of making that investment, and then the value it generates. And then we're putting together a full framework, you know, to basically measure that and to report that on an ongoing basis, because these are things that boards are going to be asking for, that executives are going to be asking for. And so, you know, we want to be on the forefront of capturing this value and providing the right AI framework as we go forward.
So that's a very important point you made. Vijay, how important is it for your peers who are chief AI officers at Fortune 500 companies to have C-level support? In some cases now, NSCD just published a report saying that boards are really concerned about AI, the impact of AI on business, et cetera, et cetera. But so talk to them a little bit in terms of, the visibility or support from either the board or the C-level execs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's incredibly important that the CEO of the company is a key sponsor of the AI initiatives, you know, that exist across the organization. Because, you know, without that C-level sponsorship, you're not going to get the movement around from, you know, the folks that own the different businesses in order to actually make the changes that are required from a process and a culture standpoint in order to really benefit from the value of generative AI. And that sponsorship is only going to come from, you know, the CEO of the company. And I think the board should really be more looking at it from an oversight position. I mean, I'm on a board and a public board. And, you know, that's my question to management, which is like, how are you really thinking about AI, you know, across your organization? You know, how are you mitigating the risks that you see? You know, how is it being used in internal processes? I mean, the role of a board is to really ask those questions and make sure they're comfortable with what the company has a game plan, you know, around, you know, AI usage in a risk mitigated way across the enterprise. And so I think, you know, all boards are going to be asking that question because it's very prevalent, you know, on the news. And, you know, for those companies that are very forward thinking on Gen AI, very bullish around it, right? The question should be more around how are you making sure that you're mitigating the risks and you're getting the value. And on the ones that are maybe more middle of the pack or lagging, it's what is your plan for leveraging more AI to drive more efficiencies, you know, with risk mitigation across the enterprise. And so I think, you know, it's really important that every company invests in an AI strategy, really by line of business, to, you know, fully understand what the value proposition for AI is, and then be able to show the maturity of deployment across the enterprise.
So C-level, board level, you know, line of sight and support is very important. Vijay, the chief AI officers, do they need to be concerned about ethics, biases, and things, governance issues in AI? Is that part of their nomenclature? Talk to your peers about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, it comes down to how is AI being used across the enterprise in different use cases, right? And so, number one, I don't think generative AI is mature enough at this point where, you know, it can be the recommendations that get generated from it can be just taken blindly. You have to have, you know, some sort of discerning internal consumer, or you have to have some sort of validation and verification. So like for us, for example, you know, service is a big part of our business. And, you know, we've created a Gen AI copilot that assists service technicians around how to troubleshoot particular issues that they encounter on site, right? Now, generative AI nicely summarizes it, you know, the answer in the right way. But at the same token, it doesn't just like summarize a blind answer. It actually links it to a document and a particular page in a document that connects the summarization with, you know, what the service technician is looking at. So the expectation is the service technician is going to go into that manual and actually look at the page and verify that, you know, it's an accurate way to approach it, right? In many cases, it really just is an efficiency and productivity gain. So instead of looking through 50 service manuals, if I can find it in less than a few minutes, you know, looking at one or two that generative AI can assist us in doing, right? You know, I think it's extremely powerful, right? So I think, you know, right now, you know, chief AI officers should be more on the cautious side of things, you know, guarding against things like bias and hallucinations and things like that. Now, over time, I do think that those things are going to be more and more mitigated depending upon the AI platform that you're using. And so, you know, do I see sort of completely closed loop AI in the not too distant future? Absolutely. I mean, you know, if you watch the Google Gemini video that got circulated last week of their new, you know, voice chatbot, I mean, that's a pretty autonomous voice chatbot that you can have a nice conversation with, right? And that's going to be launched in Android phones and, you know, Google Home devices at some point in the future, right? I mean, for me, that's when like AI becomes real, right? And do I think there's going to be some, you know, some issues in terms of certain biases or in terms of it giving some inaccurate information? Absolutely. When you have hundreds of millions or billions of queries, you know, is it going to get some wrong? Without question, right? But I think also given that it's a voice assisted chatbot, you know, probably the impact is going to be, you know, relatively lower, right? When you put it into other major production processes and things like that, I think you have to have a little bit more, you know, checks and balances such that, you know, making sure that what you're getting out of the Gen AI assistant actually makes sense in that particular context and use it more to drive efficiency versus actual actions. But I think this is, you know, what we've seen just over the last 9 months is absolutely game changing, you know. And I think going forward, you're going to see even more game changing things as we launch, you know, GPT on the iPhone, you know, in the not too distant future. So it's going to be exciting to watch this evolution without question.
Oh, yeah. I think exciting to the nth degree. Vijay, we've talked a lot about the technology per se, but how important is managing cultural and organizational changes which are going to be driven by AI adoption within an enterprise like yours?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've had the benefit of being, you know, a large organization technology leader since 2004. And so, you know, I have the benefit of having seen, you know, these kinds of technologies be introduced over the last two decades. And so in every situation, you know, the gating factor around adoption is always the cultural and process change management that's required. So one, it's competency. Two, it's, you know, really absorbing it into the business processes, you know. Three, it's having the talent to be able to actually design the solution, right? For it's the different global variations where different parts of the world are adopting at different rates of adoption. So you see this time and time again. We saw it when the internet was first, you know, really came to life with the web and the dot-com era, where you had the dot-com bust. A lot of businesses went bankrupt, and then, you know, the Amazons and Googles, you know, emerged as the major players out of that, right? You had the mobile phone, you know, many different variants of the mobile phone came out, with Apple and the app in the, you know, Android ecosystems becoming the dominant players in that particular domain, right? And similarly, I think you'll see certain players, you know, notably the, in this case, you know, the Microsofts and, you know, the Googles and the Amazons and the Metas of the world, you know, really leading the charge, you know, on this stuff and evolving, right? So, you know, in that same, you know, cycle, you're going to see a lot of test and learn, dabbling, failures, and then eventually more and more integration into the processes, right? Such that, you know, these things become, you know, ubiquitous with the process itself, right? It becomes no different than, hey, it's just AI is just part of the process, right? And so that's just the way that technology evolution has always and will always work across society. And, you know, we're still in the early stages of that diffusion period. You know, one of my favorite books is Crossing the Chasm by Geoffrey Moore. And, you know, we're still, so to speak, crossing the chasm of generative AI right now. And at some point, it will become mainstream with everything that we do on a day-to-day basis.
It'll become mainstream with everything that we do. Vijay, how do you approach the challenge of explainability and interpretability of some of these AI models? Because some of the, you know, there's in many cases black boxes. So especially when you're dealing with safety critical applications.
Yeah, that's a great question, Sanjay. And, you know, I think to some degree, given the nature of deep learning and generative AI, it's hard to be completely explicable, right? Because at the end of the day, if you think about what a vector database is, which is, you know, in many cases, you know, a precursor to, you know, a RAG pattern, you know, in generative AI, it's like throwing a dart and, you know, it hits somewhere in the middle and you pull back everything, you know, within sort of a certain confidence band, you know, in that middle. So everything we're seeing with generative AI and deep learning is statistical and mathematical based, you know, it's basically super advanced linear algebra to some degree, you know, and to do that, there's, you know, there's always some fuzziness, you know, because it's not precision, right? It's like, okay, you ask somebody, what's the distance from, you know, here to someplace in the UK, right? You know, without actually looking at a, you know, a map or doing a Google search, you know, it's somewhat of an estimation to some degree, right? And so I think what's important is explainability in some of these more non-heuristic algorithms, more fuzzy algorithms, needs to be the methodology by which the models were put together and what are the guardrails that you've put in place such that, you know, what the model outputs will have an extremely unlikely risk of producing a false positive. And really build, continuing to evolve the algorithm based upon those false positives such that, you know, the likely risk of false positives is infinitesimal, right? And so in my mind, that's the work that, you know, a core AI governance and model team needs to enforce across the enterprise is like for all the models that get built, you know, what sort of the standard documentation showing, you know, the defensibility of that model and, you know, bouncing that off with regulators, you know, being a partner. You know, I have a good friend who's the chief innovation officer at the Federal Reserve Bank. And, you know, she goes to a lot of AI conferences because this is the question that's on her mind. As banks adopt more and more AI algorithms, you know, in terms of their stress tests and other financial metrics. How does the Fed, you know, even assess those things, right? Mm-hmm. What do they need to look for? And so I think it needs to really be a partnership with, you know, really solid documentation and understanding to the extent possible of how the model works.
So as you said, good understanding, stress tests, documentation, and a good governance, which is very, very important. Vijay, one of the missions of our podcast is to democratize AI talent. If all AI talent ends up in those Magnificent Seven, then we won't have the important things you're doing in sustainability and other things. So this is going to be a chance. So for, and we've had a lot of people who asked us some questions of you. So they're saying, one of the questions, what makes Johnson Controls an exciting place to work in the field of AI? And what qualities does Vijay look for when he's building his AI team?
It's a great question. So I would say for us, the problem space that we're working in is really, really meaningful and interesting, you know, and impactful for society. So the reason I chose to come here is for purpose, you know, mm-hmm. that what is the purpose of what I'm doing with technology is, you know, really helping companies reduce their energy output, drive their decarbonization outcomes, and, you know, creating better spaces for employees and people who visit them. And so that, you know, that mission was really meaningful for me. And, you know, everything that we do going forward, AI is going to be integral to that mission. Okay. So that's, you know, why I would say, hey, why did I come to work at Johnson Controls? Why should you come to work at Johnson Controls? That's why, right? What am I looking for? It really is, number one, a passion for solving those problems. Number two is just a curiosity on understanding, like, the building's domain, like, really, you know, as I mentioned at the onset, there are unique challenges and problems in the building domains. There are different protocols, you know, that I've learned over the last 3+ years, you know, BACnet, Modbus, OPC, you know, different building domains. There's, you know, different types of equipment. There's, you know, building management systems, there's controls, there's security systems, different things, right? And the language is different and the data is different and things like that, right? So I think there needs to really be a curiosity to want to, like, learn the domain and really become an expert in the domain, because I do think buildings and IoT is really the next, you know, forefront for adoption of these technologies across industry. Number three is really having, you know, a problem solving and agile kind of mindset, right? You know, we're not going to operate like in long cycle projects that take years. You know, we want solutions in weeks and months, you know. Great story is that we had a summer intern come in this summer who put together, you know, a generative AI model, you know, and, you know, the commercial side, and he was able to produce value almost immediately, right? And so it doesn't take somebody, you know, who has 20+ years of experience in their career to be, you know, create value from, you know, a generative AI perspective. I had a guy on my team that took a two-week YouTube course on prompt engineering and was able to immediately reduce, you know, the time it took to produce release notes from a week to less than a day. And, you know, he did this with a two-week YouTube course. So it's basically the willingness to kind of understand what the problem is and really figure out, you know, how do we really address that problem in rapid speed, right? And then lastly, it's just that insatiable appetite to continue to learn. I mean, this field is changing so much. Like, so how many podcasts do you listen to? How many white papers do you read? What sources do you look at? I mean, you know, yes, the volume of resources out there is enormous, right? But I mean, you know, I'm looking for people who are voracious learners, you know, and those are the people that ultimately are going to be best fit to adapt as the technology landscape evolves rapidly over the next 12 to 24 months.
Oh, fantastic. So for potential Johnson Control AI experts. It's the passion for the mission. It's curiosity. It's the agility to do things in a fast pace. And finally, which I like the most, voracious appetite to learn, because I'm like Vijay, well, not as much as Vijay, but because this thing is moving so very, very rapidly. Great points, Vijay, for our listeners. Vijay, finally, at the end, we do a quick lightning round of questions just to get your perspective. So let's go.
Let's go.
So you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. GPUs or TPUs, Vijay?
Something that's purpose-built. Neither.
Okay. Python or R?
Python.
TensorFlow or PyTorch?
PyTorch.
Cloud or on-prem, Vijay?
Hybrid.
I knew that. Edge AI or cloud AI?
Both.
Okay. Well, let me ask the last one. Open source or proprietary?
Open source.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, Vijay, finally, to our audience, to your peers, any last message, some of the key lessons in your journey and some amazing things that you've done? Do you want to just give them a brief, quick message?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, I'm going to write an article pretty soon, like the year AI became real, right? And I think that's what we'll remember 2024 as, right? And I always hearken back to watching cartoons as a kid, and I was a big fan of the Jetsons and, all the spaceships and the talking robots and things like that, right? And I always wondered when a conversational talking robot would become real, right? And I think we'll look back on 2024 as the seminal year that actually happened due to generative AI and what we're seeing both in the demos that we saw with GPT-4o and what we've seen more recently in Gemini. And, I think 1, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, when you're just having a conversation, inside your car, with a voice assistant, that's unscripted, or with in your home with your TV or, a device, it'll become ubiquitous, right? And I think this has been something that we've all been dreaming about for many, many years. And so I would say for all the youngsters out there, especially, just continue to have like that curiosity to understand how things work and how things are built. Because I think what's really going to be so important in society going forward is not using those things, but really understanding how they're built, and how they work, because ultimately that's where the next frontier of opportunities are going to be. And, those people that can understand the essence of how are the ones that are going to be extremely successful in their professional careers going forward.
Awesome. 2024 market, as you said, will be a seminal time where we will look back and maybe you'll be talking to a chat box in your podcast rather than someone like me. But Vijay,
maybe
thank you.
Maybe we should try that someday.
Yeah, we should. Maybe it will be a lot better. Vijay, thank you for sharing your invaluable insights and experiences with us today. Really, your perspective on AI implementation in the building technology sector is truly enlightening. And I'm sure our listeners have gained a wealth of knowledge from your expertise. And to our audience, Vijay's journey and the innovative work that he's doing at Johnson Control demonstrate the transformative power of AI when combined with visionary leadership. I think that's the key. So whether you're an AI professional looking for your next career move or a business leader considering how to leverage AI in your organization, I hope this episode has provided you with the inspiration and practical insights. Remember to subscribe to the CIO podcast for more conversations with leading AI executives. So until next time, I'm your host, Sanjay Puri. Thank you for listening. Thank you so much, Vijay. This was fantastic.
Thank you for having me, Sanjay. And it's a magnificent topic that you're covering. So look forward to many more great conversations.